I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is the 100th episode of The Next Page. Marissa, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm feeling old.
Feeling old because you've recorded 100 podcasts?
Yeah, because the next page is 100 today, so.
Oh, this podcast has really aged me.
Yeah, we're at 100. But we've done it for 100 straight weeks.
Mm-hmm. So I what had I really like off. Is.
Yeah, you did have a few weeks off. But so we get to celebrate 100th, mm-hmm. and then we get to celebrate our 2-year anniversary. So yep. we kind of like get to celebrate in the next few weeks here. So.
Yes, yeah.
But that's cool. Mm-hmm. So this is really unique because you only get one 100th episode. And so the post that I wrote that went out this morning really talks about the podcast. And I love the title, the one that you came up with, which was much better than mine because I used one that we had already used. The Next Page, Past, Present, and Future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so just to tell folks how we started, because I'm not sure if we did that in the first episode, but we were looking for a way to connect digitally. We were looking for a way to have people have, a learning opportunity that would be downloadable, portable, they could take with them. Mm-hmm. I really wasn't serious about doing it, but I kept getting encouragement. And then I remember the meeting when I said, well, I'll do it if you help me. And you said, okay. And the next thing we knew, we were doing a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, the thing that was the most unique was that our trial run we just used as our first podcast. Mm-hmm. I just said, okay, that's good. We'll use it. And we have. So the name, The Next Page. Well, my blog post is 300 to 400 words. You really can't. Sometimes I go to 500, but typically not. You can't really develop a thought in 300 to 400 words. Mm-hmm. So what would be the next page of my post? And that is the podcast where we get to talk about it.
Yep.
The next bit of data that I put in here was the reach of the next page, which is really crazy because I went just the other morning when I was writing this post, I went on to Podbean to look at our statistics of the podcast, and the podcast has been listened to in 34 states, downloaded in 34 states and 16 countries.
Wow.
You know, from New York to Ohio to Michigan on to California, just in, you know, in the continental U.S., and unimaginable type of countries, you know, Italy. Well, who in Italy would be listening to the podcast? But we've, mm-hmm. you know, we don't get a ton of downloads there, but we've had downloads in 16 countries. So it really goes to prove that, you know, if you do stick to something and if you, and part of the, maybe I should talk about this too. The other caveat to starting was we needed an engineer. Mm-hmm. We needed somebody that would take the recordings because you and I record in separate locations.
Yep.
And then they have to put the recordings together. And so we use my son, Tim. That's engineer Tim. And when we asked him, we do pay him. It's not slave labor. Macne does pay Tim to edit our episodes. And Tim gave me a stipulation. And the stipulation was, I will edit the podcast if you promise to do it for a year at a minimum. Mm-hmm. And I said, why a year? And he says, if you don't do it for a year, he says, a lot of people look at longevity on podcasts. And if you're going to do it over a short, just for a short period of time, you're going to be discouraged because you won't get the downloads. You won't get, you know, the subscribers. And that's kind of true. It took a while. It mm-hmm. took quite a while. I think still our most downloaded episodes are still some of our first ones because people go back to hear.
Yep.
But then some of the later, and clearly you can see a trend that there's later downloads or higher volume mm-hmm. As people didn't want to listen to all 100 to figure out where we are. I don't think I've ever said where the music came from.
No.
Do you know where the music came from?
Was it your nephew?
Yeah, my cousin's son, David Awe, composed it and played it because you can't just pick music.
Right.
And use it because of copyright laws. Mm-hmm. So I think we may have used David's intro without him really knowing it at first, because I think Tim probably plagiarized it from David, and then David said, well, yeah, you can use it. So so David Awe of Mansfield, Ohio, who does quite a bit of composing and arranging for our churches, but he was the one that did the piano intro.
Yeah, that's great.
So let's talk about, we talked about questions. We wanted questions. Mm-hmm. And we got quite a few questions. I was surprised. So we dedicated this episode to just answering questions.
Yep.
And so what you and I didn't talk about was who's going to ask the question.
Well, I will start asking you the first question, I guess. And
go for
we'll
it.
We'll wing it.
We'll wing it. Because that's the way we've done 100 episodes.
Yes. So we have not prepared these answers. We thought we would do an off-the-cuff.
Right.
Question and answer. So the first question I've got on my list was to you, David. Who and what made you so passionate about leadership and individual growth?
So that is really a great question. And I'll start with the what. What made me passionate about leadership and individual growth? It was failing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably my darkest days as a boss, as a leader. I wasn't a leader. I guess I was a leader because I was a president of a company. But right around 2011 into 2012, the company that I was running, we had just moved. Things were very, very difficult. We had some cash crisis where, you know, because the move cost us more than we thought it would because I didn't plan things as well and I was blind to some things. But the business was running. It was still doing fine, but we were losing money and we had to figure out how to right the ship quickly. And I got it righted a bit, but we weren't getting out of the woods and I was really burning out. And then about a year or two before that, a good friend of mine had given me one of John Maxwell's books, The 21 Irrefutable Laws. I had it on my credenza. I hadn't read it because I thought I knew it all. And what I realized in those few weeks, so to speak, of soul searching was that I didn't know what I didn't know. And one of the things that I was believing everybody that was saying, you're really good, you know how to do this, you've done such a great job with the company. Because for, you know, probably I took over as president in 2004. I was VP of Ops in 2004. I took over as president in 2005. The company did well. The team performed exceptionally well. Sales were good. You know, our earnings were good, our margins were good, and I kept believing everybody that said, you're doing a great job. Lo and behold, I was for the company at that size, but when I changed the complexity of the business, I wasn't ready for it. So I started learning about leadership, and I started learning about the need for people to continue to grow. The law of the lid says your team can't grow beyond your level of expertise, and I was probably at a 3 or 4, and my team needed to have me at like a 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it happened. So the who would have probably, you know, if I'm going to put a name to somebody, John Maxwell, because I identified with the way he wrote.
Yep.
And I identified with the fact that, you know, he doesn't write textbooks. He writes books that you can really sink your teeth into and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're down to earth. So that's where it came from. And then, you know, then once you learn, oh my goodness, there's all this stuff that I can learn. There's all this stuff that I don't know. Once I became aware of my limitations and how much fun learning was, it became easy.
Mm-hmm.
So now I love to continue to learn.
Yeah. And you've stuck with it all these years.
Yeah. And people say, well, I just had the conversation with an HR manager at a local organization this week. And I said to her, she said, well, you're always learning. And I said, because you can't give what you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are asking me questions and they're wanting me to come in and coach and they're wanting me to come in and train, if I'm not getting better every day, pretty soon the product I have to offer is outdated.
Yep.
So that's why.
Awesome.
How's that for an answer?
That's a great answer.
All right. So I'm going to ask the next question.
Okay.
But you could, and you can answer your part first.
Okay.
So somebody wrote in and said, you know, what makes the connection between you and Marissa so special? Your conversations are so comfortable.
Okay. Well, I think we've worked together now for how many years? Four? Almost four?
Three and a half.
Three and a half. Okay. So yep. I think when we first met, I remember you telling me, you're like, I'm really type A about this event that we were having. You're like, I might seem controlling because I want to make sure that everything goes well and that everything.
Okay.
And I remember thinking like, oh, we're going to work together. Great. because I work like that too. And so I think because we started working on that Live to Lead, that first Live to Lead together, that,
right,
you know, we worked so well together from that point on that I think it was just a great working relationship because you understood my quirks, I understood your quirks, and I think we both have some similarities in our DISC profile. We both like to talk.
Yes. So that helps, right,
with our conversation. So that really helps with this. And I don't know. I think we've just generally gotten along really well.
Yeah, I think so. And so actually, that event was even before I started at MacNe.
That's true. That was the fall, right, before you started.
That was the fall. Yeah. So I started on the 21st of December.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be another discussion for another day, how that ended up happening. But anyways, yeah, so I do remember that. And as you mentioned it, that, you know, Live to Lead, I had kind of taken the risk on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And purchased the site license to do Live to Lead. And then I decided to approach MacNe to see if MacNe would partner with me.
Mm-hmm.
And you folks said yes. And yeah, I probably said, listen, this needs to be special,
mm-hmm,
kind of thing. But I also remember, even maybe before Live to Lead, the first time I remember meeting you, because you must have just gotten to MacNe,
mm-hmm,
I was asked to do like an HR council meeting or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed some pictures for my John Maxwell thing. So I actually handed you my phone and said, would you mind snapping a picture or two? You know,
mm-hmm,
but so that was really the first time that you and I worked together.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that happened was you and I were the only ones in the office between that week between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah.
Because I think you were new, didn't have vacation, and I had just showed up. So
that was that time I got highlights that I really didn't like in my hair. I had to dump all those emotions on you real quick when
like,
you were...
Oh, my goodness. Oh. And then what happened was Randy said, you need to write,
yeah,
to me. And I'm like, I need to do what? Yeah, you need to write every week type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said, well, I'll help you. I'll edit your, mm-hmm, writing. And so, mm-hmm, you ended up being my accountability partner.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And I think too, I think, you know, I value what you bring to the table. Mm-hmm. You know, you're my daughter's age,
mm-hmm,
so you're my kid's age, but I think you're very mature, and you just, your goal is always to help people get better,
mm-hmm,
and I can tell, like when I used to see you interacting every day at work, you were adding value to people, which is what we talked about last week,
mm-hmm,
and the value that you added to my writing, and what I love about it is that, and I tell everybody I can, is that when you edit my writing, you don't change my voice, which is really, that's a gift that you have, to be able to keep it sounding like me, only better. So I think that's probably why our conversations are comfortable, because we've worked really closely together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, you're looking at everything I write.
Yep.
And I thought it was, so one of the things, the first preface to the book that I'm writing, when you wrote it back and you just said, I forgot how it was, like you were so worried to say something to me, but basically it was way too wordy. And you just said, I would really hate to have somebody stop reading because you lost him at the preface. Like, duh. And I remember showing it to my wife and it's like, look what Marissa just wrote. But it was perfect. It's exactly what I needed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that, I think that's why we get along,
yeah,
together. Cause I, you know, I believe strongly in adding value to people, and that's really how you work.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
So our next question is,
you're next,
back to you. So it's a kind of long question, so hang with it. When starting out in the process of making changes in emotional intelligence, is it better to focus on areas that can change rapidly in order to get some momentum going? Or would it be better to focus on the harder, slower changes that might have a bigger impact in our lives and or leadership style?
Wow, that's a loaded question.
Mm-hmm.
And let me give you the why. from a coaching standpoint, I'm going to say you work on what you have to work on first. Mm-hmm. The big, you know, eat your ugliest frog first mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm going to settle on that one. My first thought was, well, you want to get some early wins. But you know what? That's not going to build you a lot of momentum. And if we're looking to truly change an emotional intelligence piece, it takes concerted effort to do it. If you believe what the experts will say, it can take 270 days of practice to truly change a behavior. Because we're not looking at just instituting a habit. We're talking about changing the way we think. You know, we're talking about mm-hmm. changing the response to a stimuli, which takes a lot more effort. And I just had this conversation with somebody today. I was doing some coaching in Auburn at one of our member companies who invests heavily in their people. And this one gentleman said, you know, the joke is that people keep saying that he should take, you know, an emotional intelligence class. And he always says, I have already. And then he kind of shouts at him. But I shared with him, and I've shared this with a lot of my coaching friends. I've had a struggle with my emotional intelligence in a specific area of my life, and it really is. It's not my work career. It's in the faith community that I'm part of, where twice a year we have 2-day meetings, and there's usually 25 to 28 of us that have the responsibility of some oversight. And I quickly realized about 3 years ago that I was dominating too many of the conversations. So I determined that the way for me that was wrong. I figured out what my triggers were. I figured out what the stimuli was that was really pushing me in that direction. And then what I said was, I'm going to limit myself to 4 comments per day. And I have 4 sheets of paper numbered 1 through 4. And I have them in my portfolio that I carry with me every day. And when I would get into the meeting, I'd lay those down face up and I keep looking at it. And then I evaluate, is this comment worth saying? Now, what's happened? So somebody asked me this, asked me about it in San Diego a couple weeks back. And what I said to him was, I said, the neat part is I don't need the paper anymore
mm-hmm.
because I've changed the way I think about those things. I still have them as like a safeguard. So I would, getting back to the question, I would take the biggest issue and work it first and focus on it and have ways of remembering that issue daily, because mm-hmm. even though I don't use these number sheets daily, I see them daily
mm-hmm.
and you'll begin to, but it might take you 9 months,
right?
But don't be discouraged. Just keep working on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way I would answer that question. Work on the biggest one first. That's going to have the biggest impact on your life or leadership style.
All right. And now I kind of have a follow-up question for sure. you. This one says, how long do you build or strengthen an area before you look at another area to strengthen? So I know you mentioned it could take 9 months to
right.
really complete that change, but at what point could you maybe take on another challenge? Would you wait the 9 months? Would it be 3 months? Is there a metric that you're looking for before deciding, okay, I'm ready to introduce a new behavior change or habit?
Sure. So if I remember the numbers right, in the Mastering Emotional Intelligence class that we teach at MACNE, they're actually encouraging us. They're saying that you could probably work on 2 at the same time,
mm-hmm.
but that you should kind of build things in over a month. Like mm-hmm. every month you could introduce more.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had something that was really, really a super big deal, I probably would only work on that one, but as soon as I felt that I was getting traction and there was evidence that people are telling me, yeah, you're doing better, I would then be willing to introduce another one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, your affirmations can be really big too in some of these areas. So maybe we're looking at something as being an emotional intelligence kind of issue, where it might be not so much emotional intelligence in terms of self-awareness or social awareness or those type of things. It could be a little bit of a self-doubt. It could be a confidence issue. And if that's the case, you know, you could just build in your daily affirmations and just read them every day
mm-hmm.
to yourself. But I would start with one. Once I see some traction, I'd begin working on another one. In terms, when we deal with some of this stuff, it's hard to get a metric or a measurement.
Mm-hmm.
But you would, I would look for feedback from other people.
Great.
And I would seek it. You know, mm-hmm. when I would go to these meetings twice a year, periodically, I will ask people, how am I doing? Are you seeing a change?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really the metric you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Do you think I answered that question well enough?
Yeah. And I think it's not, you know, black or white. There is a gray area right. here. And I think it also kind of depends on your personality, your, you know, how adaptive you are to throwing something new into your routine. Because, you know, it does. It becomes a routine, your habits.
Right. Right.
So I think, if it feels like it's going to be stressful to start something new right now, maybe it's not the best time.
Exactly. You don't want to add stress and anxiety.
Right. So to me, it's like once you feel like you're coasting on, you know, you've implemented something new and you feel like you're coasting, maybe give it a couple more days and then say, okay, like this is the first habit change or thing that I was working on, challenge, whatever, isn't such a big deal anymore. It's just part of my life now. Then you're more ready for something new.
Right. And expect setbacks. Mm-hmm. You're going to do well. And for instance, you know, let's say I'm doing very well with this issue. And then all of a sudden one day I go to a meeting and I'm not feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
All bets are off.
Yeah.
Because we're just not fully in control or we're really tired. Mm-hmm. Those are things that can really come up and mm-hmm. bite us in the backside, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marissa, my turn to ask you a question.
All right.
Is there a simple way to prioritize work projects and objectives besides using a deadline? You know, what happens, like, if you're getting overloaded? How do you mm-hmm. know what to do?
So, some of the things that I like to do to prioritize is to think about, of course, you have to keep deadlines in mind. I also like to set up mini milestones along the way.
Oh, I like that.
So instead of waiting until Monday morning when I look at my calendar and see that something is due on Tuesday, I try to, you know, make sure that I'm working along on projects along the way. But other things to prioritize are considering if what it needs to be done is something that is urgent, or if it's important. Is it important to me? Is it important to other people? And kind of prioritizing from there. So let me see if I can give an example. So Macne's magazine. By this point, I think everyone has probably gotten a copy that is a Macne member. Yep. And hard copy or digital. So that is something that had to be really high priority for me because it wasn't just me working on getting the magazine out the door. I had a team of writers, a team of designers, printers to consider getting on the printing schedule, the mail house. I had a lot of moving parts. So that is something that was urgent in a way because mm-hmm. I had to make sure the printer needed my stuff in order to go to print. It was important. It was important to me. It was important to our membership. And so that might have been something that would take priority over, say, the Macne newsletter that comes out every month. It Sure. comes out in the first week of the month, not necessarily the first, could be the fourth. So it's taking a step back and looking at the level of importance and urgency and who is impacted by it. If it's something simple, like you just were hoping to clean your desk off by Friday.
Right.
As great as it would have been to do that, maybe it needs to get pushed to Monday in order to make room for something more important. But I think really the best way is to just be proactive so that you're not getting to this sense of overload and overwhelm and setting up those mini milestones along the way and learning right. that sometimes you do have to say not right now. Or no.
Yep.
And knowing the difference between the two. That would be my Absolutely. Advice.
Absolutely. That's excellent. The other thing is, so the three R's of prioritization, what's required.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things, you know, when, and I use this as an example. when I was at Self-Lock, Monday mornings, there were certain things that were required. One is I had to sign off on the hours that were worked so that they could go to payroll. Because if payroll didn't get called in on Monday, we weren't going to get paychecks on Thursday. So, hello, that's got to happen.
Right.
So that would be something that's required. What gives us the greatest return? So we're looking at, if we think of the Pareto analysis that says 20% of our efforts will give us 80% of our return. So what am I going to do that's going to move my objectives forward the farthest with a certain amount of effort? So that would be the, you know, another way to look at it. And then the last one is what gives me the greatest reward? So what of these actions can I build into today that are going to speak to my heart and give me the impetus to want to come back the next day type of thing? But I love your point about the mini milestones and breaking things down and looking at the deadlines. I think the key to prioritizing and getting and achieving objectives, excuse me, it wouldn't be the next page if I wouldn't cough. And so people did want we promised bloopers. Engineer Tim has no time for bloopers, so sorry. They're not.
It's just a lot of coughing.
It was just a lot of coughing and me forgetting what my name was. Anyways. And maybe the day that Isla came in.
Yeah.
That was just adorable. So
that actually wasn't a blooper because we left it in.
That's right. We left it in. We didn't cut it out. Yeah. I'm also seeing here, I'm reading between the lines that this employee may feel that they're overloaded completely. And that their boss is putting too much on their plate. And you have to have that conversation with your boss. You have to say, listen, I'm trying, and show how you're prioritizing, show how you're putting milestones in place, you know, show how you're looking at, you know, what are the drop dead kind of things that have to happen? When do they have to happen? And you're managing your calendar. You got to take control of your daily agenda.
Right.
And when you get to a point where there's no more days left, you have to have the tough conversation. Say, I don't want to let you down, but which item on this list can we take off?
Right. I think you and I have probably both done that. I know that I've been in a position to say, you know, if this is so important and really needs to get done, what can get pushed back?
Right.
And right. Putting that in the hands of your manager, saying like, I'm going to allow you to tell me what can get put on the back burner for a little bit while I work on these other things.
Exactly. You know, and you've done that with me where I've said, okay, Marissa, I'm struggling. I'm trying to get this done. You say, if you get it to me by this date, I'm fine. But if somebody gives you that slack, you better get it to them by that date.
Yeah.
Or a little bit earlier.
I think it's just a lot of open communication that's really important. Right.
Yeah, open communication and trust, which makes it work.
Yep.
Which probably kind of circles all the way back to why are our conversations so comfortable? Is that we do communicate, we value each other, and there's a level of trust, which makes it work. So we're pretty much at our time limit. We're only half done with our questions.
Should we continue this on into our next episode?
I think we should probably do it. We should probably do it next week.
Yeah.
That makes sense to you?
Yes. I didn't think we'd have this many questions. So
I didn't either, we'll because have to in some
continue
of
continue on.
Yeah, and we also want to give folks, you know, the post for that went out was the next page, past, present, and future. We haven't talked about future yet.
So. No, I guess we'll have to do a to be continued on the future.
To be continued, but we don't have any like dum-dum music type thing. So, any special plans this weekend?
Well, it's Mother's Day weekend.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
How could I forget that? Well, you know, don't feel bad. Don't worry. It's not that I don't feel bad. Don't worry. I've already bought the car. There's a gift card in it. It's here. It's ready to go. And I already took a plant to my mother.
Good. That's great.
Thankfully, my wife was helping me make sure that my mother was taken care of because sometimes I don't do so good. So I hope you have a wonderful Mother's Day.
Thank you. Yeah, we're celebrating. You know, my parents have been gone for a little bit, so it'll be nice to celebrate with my mom. My grandmother and some of my other family. So I hope you guys do the same.
Yeah, this weekend special. It's Mother's Day. Terrific. Well, I wish you a happy Mother's Day. And with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.